Welcome to We Empower, the radio show that inspires you to embrace your potential, resilience, and strength. In these challenging times, we're here to help you unlock your power to overcome obstacles, pursue your dreams, and shape a brighter future. I'm Anna Bertanes, your host for this empowering hour. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of We Empower. I'm thrilled to have you all with us today. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired. Let's make today count. In today's episode, we will dive into recapping something from the last week. And of course, we have a special song sorted out by Ruth von Heusinger, which is the intriguing personality of our as our special guest for today. So in addition, we will have a special book, and the book seems to doesn't fit for her, for our guest today, because it's about a failure. So let's start first with her, and I'm looking forward to start with Ruth's favorite song. I'm really close tonight. Ruth von Heusinger, welcome here in this talk show.
Thanks a lot, Annabelle. I'm really happy to be here.
Ruth, we haven't managed this and haven't talked about this, and we couldn't have even planned it. But this week, this day with you is a very historical day, I'd say. What happened in this week? I mean, that's enough for a laugh, for a year, but for really not a week. We had a really whirlwind in the political situation on not only in Saxonia but also on our national level. We have the situation currently, in addition with the election, with having now a new president in the United States, which might change a lot. We have on the 9th, 35 years of celebration of breaking the wall down. And then you got an award. First of all, I would like to introduce you in a few words. Ruth says about herself that she's a graduate physicist, so a physics graduate, worked in emissions trading, and gained experience in the voluntary carbon market. She utilized her expertise to establish For Tomorrow. And reading this this line you wrote about you, I thought, oh, okay, this is typical Ruth. She's a really doer. She's not a talker. She's really moving things. And this is one thing I like about you since we've got to know each other, because the first meeting was when I heard from GRACE, a supporting organization for women which are getting entrepreneurs. They said, Annabelle, we have the right mentee for you. She is a great, enthusiastic person as you. I think you could be sisters.
Oh, nice.
When you're talking, you're moving things for the better. And when I saw her, it was super clear that we are super close, but that we will see each other super little because of our time schedules. So I'm more than happy, Ruth, to have you here. And yeah, welcome again. I said in the beginning, you won an award. Would you like to say a few words about this? Because this is great, what we were awarded for.
First of all, thanks a lot, Annabelle, for having me here in the show. So it's a pleasure to be here, and especially after such a week with really a lot of turmoil. And it was really, really great that we got the award, especially in this week, because it reminded me that we have to move on.
Yes.
No matter what happens, we have to keep up the good work. And the award we got was for Tomorrow. That's a nonprofit that I founded almost 5 years ago now. And what we do is that we give people the opportunity to buy away emission rights out of the emission trading system, so to keep EU emissions down and to plant new forests in Europe. And this award that we got was from Berlin. So it was about Berlin's social companies, and we got the first place in the category Planet, and also some money with it, which also helps us a lot, of course. And it's important to get this recognition, because sometimes the work feels a bit tedious when you're working so hard for the things, and then things happens, natural catastrophes, for example. I just got through one, experienced one in Valencia last week, so it's a tough week. And there's so much we need to do to get our climate stable again.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. And it is a climate outside. It's a climate inside us, where we have to also stay with our energy inside us. And therefore, you sorted out the song Fall at Your Feet by Lost Frequencies, which is a which is such a kind of great, because this Fall at Your Feet could be just a kind of shout out, isn't it?
Yeah, it is really. It's a song that really relaxes me, because it reminds me to not dwell on past mistakes, to not dwell on what bad is happening in the world, but really to look for the positive things, to trust and to do the best you can.
And isn't it also that lost frequencies is also a kind of symbol for our current situation? Because it feels sometimes to me that we speed up all the time, even more and more. People lost the connection to nature. And how can you fight for nature, or how can you apply for nature, even if it's this where you come from or where you go to, if you lost the frequency of this, if you don't know exactly what it means or what it takes, what I mean, if you always had it and you had never the experience that this is something a rare good, then it's sometimes that I have the feeling that a lot of people lost this frequency of nature.
Yes.
Do you think that organizations like you can bring this back? Or what do you need? What do you think? What does it need to get back this frequency?
Yeah, so I think it's really important to stay in good connection with yourself and also with the nature around you, because it's all about connection. We are in an ecosystem and we are not alone. What we do with For Tomorrow, for example, is when we plant this new forest, we invite everybody to plant with us. So it's really nice to plant together these trees that will, if everything goes well, then they will outlast us. They will get older than we will get, most likely. And it's such a nice experience to really plant something with your hands that will stay there in the future and that will do good and provide living space for the bees and the birds around us. So that's just really nice. And also to stay away from all this media and social media and just do something with your hands outside in nature. That's always a nice experience.
Is it that you are part of that often and are sharing this experience with the people?
Can you repeat? I mean, I
you
lost the
often,
first.
Are you often part of these experiences? Are you often part of this these situations where you plant a tree? Where you are
Yeah, we always, every planting site that we do, we go there and plant a few trees together, because it's on the one hand, it's just important to know the site and to really know how the work is done. And on the other hand, it's just a great opportunity for everybody to really see what we are doing and why it's important, and also how much work it is, because it is really much work to plant a new forest.
Yeah, exactly. To imagine that, can you describe for the people who are listening to us now, do you have ground, or is it that the customers, your customers have to deliver ground? Where are you planting these trees? Because you talked also about bees and birds. How can we imagine that?
Yeah, so it's people, they just donate to us because it's a non-profit. And then we use these donations, and with partners together, we find sites where there's no forest now. So, for example, we planted on a site where in GDR time there was coal exploited, and nothing grew on this land because the earth was so bad, that the soil was so bad that was there. So the land was state owned still. So we work with the local governments, and then we just finance the new forest. And there we always do a lot of talking with the people who are there, because they know what's best species to plant there. But we have some strict measures, so it must always be a mixed forest, so different tree species, and then tree species that bloom as well, because that's really important for the insects. And then we have the always in autumn and in spring you can plant the forest. In summer you can't plant, and in winter you can't plant because soil is just too cold. But in autumn and in spring, then we have the planting site. So we will go to the next site in December now, and then we will plant a new forest with the school class together. I'm really looking forward to that. And then in spring again.
Yeah, great. And are you involving also the regional partners or the village, the streets around the city?
Yes. So now with the school class, that's a regional school class that's coming. Sometimes politicians are also coming from the region. And we always work with a local forest person because they just know best what's possible on that land.
Right. You have been doing this for 4 or 5 years already, Ruth, and you've built up a team. How many people do you have on the in your team currently?
Our team is still quite small. We are four people now, and we will be five next year. So that's nice. It's growing. But we wouldn't be able to manage all the work without all the volunteers. So we have a huge amount of volunteers who
If
do
somebody's
little
interested,
projects.
I'm sorry for interrupting you, but if somebody's interested and says, "Okay, what Ruth does, I love. I would love to support her," can they write you if they're interested to support you?
Yeah. Please look up at fortomorrow.eu. We have an English website as well, and there we always have the packages that we need for volunteering. So
Right.
that's most welcome.
Okay, we have to check. You have to check this out because it's worth value, and it is for our planet, definitely. Ruth, you are not only an entrepreneur, you are also a mother, as I know. Is this right?
Yes. I have two children, 7 and 9 year olds now.
Isn't it sometimes challenging if you have a job which is not only a job, which is even more like this, which is a kind of, let's say, a call of life for you, and something where you want to move the world for the better, and then having kids, which sometimes even want the mother full time.
Yeah, I actually founded For Tomorrow during my maternity leave. And it was really because I thought, okay, what can we do more? And I wanted to give people the opportunity to really bring down emissions here in Europe. So it was really motivated by my children. But then, of course, the first years were really hard because building up a new company takes a lot of time. And on the other hand, I had my young children who also need a lot of time. But luckily, I could combine a lot because, Corona just started. We started in 2020, we went live, and then everything was doable from home. So that was partly also good for me in that time. But yeah, also really challenging.
I can imagine. Before we go into the first break and see each other then 3 minutes afterwards, maybe one last question before the break. Can you give us maybe three hacks how you deal with a new situation? There's a kid, you have your job, which is even much more than a job. What were your three biggest hacks for getting done this and not struggling with all of that?
Yeah, I remember a meeting. I was in a meeting with an important company, and then my little kid shouted something that it had finished something and was really proud. And then I just shouted back, "Well done." And then my other kid did the same, and I shouted back again, "Well done." And it was just, then I could continue the meeting because I just quickly gave them what they needed. And the people in the meeting didn't mind. They laughed. I explained it. And I think that's just possible. You can combine the two, and mostly people are really friendly about it. So that was also really nice from the business partners, of course.
Yeah, that's, I think, a great learning. Some people are really shy to do so, and they think, it's unprofessional, but that's life. No, it fits to us, it's a part of us. So why not integrating this and showing also with this reaction of you that you are a full professional, knowing how relevant it is to give young people a good feedback at the right time.
Yes.
And then we go into the break. We see each other in 3 minutes. So stay tuned and we continue then talking about great, interesting stuff you haven't heard about Ruth so far.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If up Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Ruth, we started in our first session and first part of the talk show talking about your life as an entrepreneur. And I ask you how many people you have in your team, not because of saying, oh, you're small or you're big, but I think it's important to understand that each time, each period of entrepreneurship is really challenging. And because, I mean, even a small team has to be leaded by good leadership. And even if you're running out of money or you have also other challenges around you, this can be really tough. And I mean, I know from the past where some people said, okay, how many people do you have working for you? And I said, okay, this and this. Oh, this is little. I thought you were bigger. But it's not about that. I mean, it is about the idea, and it's about the messages you give into the world and what you can do with this stone you're throwing into water, right? And the stone can be a small one, but the impact can be a big one. It's all about ourselves. And then you started as a solo founder. How was the step from being the one for everything to getting first your team, if you look back into this? Have it changed your role and your understanding of yourself?
Yeah, it was, I mean, there is my favorite song also fits really well with Let It Go, because when you do everything and it's maybe kind of... yeah, at first it was a bit hard to let go, but I wanted it as well, because I wanted to give away the responsibility. I want people to really take over a certain area. And there were areas where I'm just not really good at, like marketing. I'm not a marketing person. So in the end, I was really happy to let it go and to give it up and to give over the responsibility to somebody else. And so it was hard to take the step to really let go and not be a leader who has something in his mind, in her mind, and wants it exactly the same way, but to really allow people to find their own ways. But in the end, it's so much better because it frees also so much time for me. And then I can focus really on the stuff that I can do best and that I like best. So I'm really happy with the situation now. So, and if I also hear this, that people tell me that, oh, that's a small team. But I actually take it as a compliment, because it means if they are astonished that we get so much done with a small team, then that's a compliment, of course.
Exactly. I would completely agree with you. And I mean, it also needs the same procedures or the same rules to make a good team, because if you want to grow, the substance have to be right.
Yeah.
There are some keys or rules you gave the team, or you developed together with the team, that you can make sure that even in crisis times, even in times where they may be challenged by the situation in our world, that you keep your team motivated and effective and engaged?
Yes, so what we really established were we used more tools when we grew. So we use Notion, for example, and Slack to just like keep that. The communication, because it's just so important. Before, if you are just one person or two person, of course you know everything, but then when you grow, it's not so. You need to have redundancies so that people can take over easily, and that's why we document a lot in Notion, so that it's so helpful. And then what we also did is, so I like if people can just work the way how they can perform best. So we have a lot of freedom in the organization, but we have some rules, so that for the meetings that we do together, we have two regular meetings each week, that we are there all in the office, so that we can talk together, because we just experienced that for this trust basis that you need, especially when there are challenges, it's so much easier if you are together in person and can really talk the things over, and also go to lunch together on these days. And yeah, that just helps a lot. But otherwise, we also work a lot from home. I'm at my home at the moment. And I think that's also really good for especially the focused work.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think this mixture is good, and it needs the rules, as you say, you know, besides.
Yeah.
Thing. It needs, of course, the focus, and it needs also the rules given by all of you. You went into Mint, and still nowadays we have many campaigns running about getting more gold into mathematics, physics, and so. What did you do, or what should maybe your parents do, or your environment, that you were so interested in this field?
Yeah, that's actually it's a funny question, because my mom, actually, she is a judge. So when I was really little, I wanted to be a judge like my mom, and my father, he's a manager. So then I wanted to be a manager. And then I asked my father, what do I need to study to become a manager? And he said, just study what interests you. So that was a really good tip. And then I let myself inspired by, actually, it was a comic book. It's called Yoko Tsuno. I don't know if you know it. I think it's a Belgian drawer, and it's a Japanese character, a woman character who is an electrician, actually. So I studied with electrical engineering. There are even less women than in physics. And then in electrical engineering, we had math and physics as well. Yeah. And I just found it so interesting that I wanted to deepen my knowledge there. So I moved to physics then.
Right. And was it always clear for you? I mean, you founded a Greenpeace group. So it was quite early clear for you that you wanted to do something for the climate, for our planet?
Yes, that was also, it was a children's book I had. I was around 4 years old. I think it's called, it's a German book, Die Kinder unter der Erde, so the children under the earth. And it's about Mother Earth talking to the people that they don't treat her right, and the grown-ups are not listening. And then she talks to the children are listening. They talk to the grown-ups, but the grown-ups are not listening to their children. And then Mother Earth takes in the children so that they sleep in the earth, and then the grown-ups start to rethink and start to see how meaningless their lives is without their children. And it's a really touching book. And then they start to change, then they start to repair stuff, they start to install renewable energy, and It's also described that it's hard to do the transformation, but that it's worth it. And that really, I think that influenced me a lot. And that was also, then why with friends, I did the Greenpeace group in school time already.
That's interesting, Ruth. Do you have still this book, Die Kinder unter der Erde?
Yeah, I actually still got it, and I got it now and read it to my kids as well.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I have if you can provide me the complete title, I would provide it later.
Yeah, I think it's Die Kinder in der Erde, but I can send you a link. Yeah.
Okay.
Great. I wonder if it's there in English as well. If it got translated, it was during the 80s. I think it was during this time where you had Chernobyl, yeah. And where a lot of people thought that we need to do things differently.
Yeah, great. It is also for me that some books touched me that way, that a few months ago, I started getting these books even and paid a lot of money for these. Really touching moments with the photo series books from written by Astrid Lindgren, photographed by very well-known photographers about Kinder of the World, portraying them about their culture, about their habits, about their special ideas about the world. But back to you. You started not non-profit, you started profit, and then you realized that you wanted to go into a non-profit. Was there a special situation where it was clear to you, besides your motherhood, that it might be now the right moment? Was there an experience which you would like to share with us?
Yeah, I think it was also, it was really because I got more independent. I got an inheritance. Mm-hmm. And before, I always wanted to be independent. So I always had this, when I worked in the for-profit area still, I always saved money so that I can have this independence so that I don't need to work from a certain age anymore. Mm-hmm. And then I got this inheritance, and then I was thinking, what do I really want to do? What's really the most important? And that was for me really climate protection. So then I moved to a company where really climate protection was the overall goal and not making money. So that was the reason why I moved into the nonprofit sector then.
Yeah. If you compare the people working in both areas, would you say that the types of people are different?
That's an interesting question. I think more the system is different, because if you work in the for-profit area, you have a lot of good people working there for good things as well, but you still always have the system where you need to generate profit and you need to generate it for some shareholders. Mm-hmm. And that's something you don't have in the nonprofit area. I mean, there you can, you of course also generate profit, but the profit all goes back to the good goal. So for us, it's climate protection. So that really makes a different system where you also have a different thinking, because you know this goal is the most important, the climate protection, and not making money for shareholders.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that this is something which is more relaxing the people in a kind of, I can work for the things which are really matter than just working for some finance I can't grab, I can't really see, which is not something I get a return?
I think actually more the other way around, mm-hmm. because you have a lot of really purpose-driven people there, and who tend to overwork themselves because they just want to reach this goal, like stop global warming, which is a huge goal. And in the other space, it's much more easier if you have a currency where you can put your work on. So, you know, you work and you get money and then it's done. It's a bit more easier to know when you have worked enough in the nonprofit area, it's like you can always do more and you can always get closer to your goal that's really close to your heart as well. And then you really need to look out for the people that they don't overwork themselves. In the other for-profit area, it's more like, okay, if I should work more, I want more money. It's a bit more,
It's important.
Different.
So you have to take care a bit more of the people, right?
Yeah.
Of yourself too. And I can feel this because same to me, that sometimes I'm sitting at my desk and checking out the news and thinking, I have to, I can't sleep.
I have to do something.
Exactly. It's so much horrible happening outside. I can't stop now and lay in bed and just doing nothing. And then you have to give yourself rest, understanding that the power you have inside you is at least same important than that, right?
Yeah, you have to take really good care of yourself.
Is there something how you do this? I mean, with two kids, a challenging job, with this crisis outside, is there something you have for yourself to stay powerful?
I really had to learn that because before I, you know, I mean, everybody likes maybe to think of themselves as like superwoman or something that you can do more and more and more. And, but then I had really good coaches and I changed my thinking. So now I think more about it like sports. You can do a lot, but then you also need the pauses. And the pauses are really, really important because that's the time where you grow. So I value the pauses more. I do a lot of writing then, or meditation or sports. For example, I go running in the morning. And at the moment, I even don't listen. I don't listen to anything when I run because I have so much in my head and I need to process it. So that helps me a lot. And I have a bit of tea ceremony. I drink green tea every morning. And then I take time to plan my day, to write, to reflect. And I just noticed that this time it's really work time. It's really valuable for the work.
That's great. Because you are facing so many challenges, it's important to stay tight, right?
Yeah, and to stay focused.
Yeah, exactly. And isn't there something that you think by healing and supporting the word, I could do here, there? How do you make it to stay focused? You told us this tea ceremony. Yes, I understand that. But, I mean, if many people come, Ruth, don't you want to go here in the bar? Don't you want to help us on not only planting trees, but also growing?
Yeah.
How can you stay focused by saying no at the right time?
So what helps me a lot is my calendar is full, and if I let something new in, I need to get rid of something else, otherwise it doesn't work, because I can't magically make that the day is one hour longer. I wish I could, but I can't. So that helps a lot, if you have this in your mind that if you let something new in, you have to put something else out. And then I have my priorities really right. So for me, the focus is on Europe. I think it's really good if we do climate protection projects in the global south as well. But for me, the focus is on Europe, because I think we need to get it right here. We need to get climate neutral here. And to have that is then really easy. Then I can help people who do the other stuff, because I know it's important, but I know that it's not what I do. So I can separate there.
Yeah, that sounds good. So Ruth, there would be so much more I would like to ask you. And you gave us great messages, like that we should follow our feet. It's important that we all always stay focused, and that a break sometimes makes the best grow ever. So thank you very, very much to be here in the show. I'm very much looking for our further cooperation. And it's great that there are people in the world like you, which are spending the time and even a lot of their energy over the day by doing the making the world a better place and making the people around us understanding it easily, because that's the same important, not only doing, but also making it easy for other people to be able to follow you. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Annabelle, and thanks a lot for listening.
Thank you, Ruth. So we unfortunately come to an end with the talk show, but we have, of course, a lot of great things expecting, and like the book about failure. We have now a small break, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again. So stay tuned. Thank you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with a skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck. Fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So now let's continue with a great book, The Gift of Failure. And the subtitle is How the Best Parents Learn to Let Go So Their Children Can Succeed. It's not just a book about parents. It is also a book about the world we see it and how we can get to real success. So I will tell you a little bit about the book before we step into it, and I'll read out of it. The Gift of Failure by Jessica Leahy is a complete examination of how overprotective parenting and the fear of letting children fall may actually hinder their growth and resilience. Leahy, drawing on years of experience as an educator, illustrates how stepping back and allowing children to face challenges can foster greater self-confidence, competence, and self-sufficiency. Through engaging anecdotes and practical advice, she encourages parents to reframe their fear of failure as an essential part of growth rather than a pitfall to the avoided. The book is not just theoretical, it is grounded in research on child development and presents actionable strategies for parents and educators, and of course, for yourself. Leahy's conversational tone makes complex topics accessible and relatable. She effectively blends humor, empathy, and tough love, providing a thought-provoking guide that promotes a healthier perspective on parenting. A standard feature of the book is its exploration of how academic pressure can impact a child's willingness to take risks or experiment, ultimately stifling creativity. Overall, this book is a must-read for parents, teachers, and anyone invested in helping children thrive despite, or perhaps of life setback, or just for yourself. Jessica Leahy is a teacher, writer, and mother who has spent decades in the classroom and at the forefront of educational innovation. Growing up in a family of educators, they developed a passion for learning and nurturing growth in children. Her early exposure to teaching influenced her career path and her interest in child development. Over the years, she contributed widely to national publications such as The Atlantic and The New York Times, particularly focusing on education, parenting, and child welfare issues. Her work over and over intersects with topics of resilience, addiction, and self-efficacy, further enriching her insights. The motivation behind writing this book stems from Leahy's personal and professional experiences witnessing the damaging effects of rescue parenting. In her role as a teacher, she saw students burdened by fear of making mistakes, often hesitant to take on challenges. Her own journey as a mother also contributed to her reflections on parenting approaches and the importance of stepping back to allow children to build self-confidence through struggle. Leahy wanted to provide parents with a guide to embracing failure as a valuable learning opportunity, shifting social norms around success and self-worth. So on 7 tips I would like to share from the book. First, encourage children to take age-appropriate risks. Resist the urge to rescue them from every difficulty. Praise effort and progress, not just results. Teach problem-solving skills by asking guiding questions. Focus on long-term goals over short-term achievements. Cultivate intrinsic motivation rather than relying on external rewards. Allow natural consequences to reinforce lessons. So I sorted out 5 quotes from the author. Failure is a teacher. It forces us to grapple with our limitations, learn from our mistakes, and become better people. When we protect our kids from failure, we also protect them from the opportunity to learn self-control, perseverance, and resilience. Success isn't the absence of failure. It is persistence through failure. To become capable adults, children must feel the discomfort of failure and learn to cope with it independently. By letting children struggle, we offer them a priceless opportunity to learn that they can survive, recover, and grow from their failures. So with this, I want to end the review about the book and just step with a few minutes into the book by reading. And there's a lot which I could read and which I would love to read because the book is great, really. But I'll start here at one point. I know you all, and I will a while uphold the unevoked humor of your illness. Yet, herein will I imitate the sun, who doth permit the base contagious clouds to smother up his beauty from the world, that when he please again to be himself, being wanted he may be more wonder dead. Breaking through the foul and ugly mists of vapors that did seem to straggle him. Of all the year were playing holidays, to sport would be as tedious as to work. But when they saw him come, they wished for it come, and nothing splutteth but rare accidents. So when this loose behavior I throw off and pay the debt I've never promised, but how much better than my word I am. So much shall I falsify man's hope, and like bright metal on a solemn ground, my reformation glittering o'er my fault shall show more goodly and attract more eyes than that which hath no followers set it off. I so fent to make offense a skull, redeeming Tom when men think least I were Prince Hal. Became a parent and a middle teacher in the same year, and these twin roles have shaped the way I've raised my children and educated my students. Over the course of my first decade raising 2 boys and teaching hundreds of children, I began to feel a creeping sense of unease, a supposition that something was rotten in the state of my parenting. But it was only when my elder child entered middle school that my world collided and the source of the problem became clear to me. Today's overprotective, failure-avoidant parenting style has undermined the competence, independence, and academic potential of an entire generation. From a vantage point at the front of my classroom, I long viewed myself as a part of the solution, a champion of my students' intellectual and emotional bravery. However, as the same caution and fear I witnessed in my students began to show up in my own children's life, I had to admit that I was part of the problem. We have taught our kids to fear failure, and in doing so, we have blocked the surest and clearest path to their success. That's certainly not what we meant to do. And we did it for all the best and well-intentioned reasons. But it's what we have wrought nevertheless. Out of love and desire to protect our children's self-esteem, we have bulldozed every uncomfortable bump and obstacle out of their way, clearing the manicured path we hoped would lead to success and happiness. Unfortunately, in doing so, we have deprived our children of the most important lessons of childhood, the setbacks, mistakes, miscalculations, and failures we have shoved out of our children's way are the very experiences that teach them how to be resourceful, persistent, innovative, and resilient citizens of this world. As I stood there in this moment in my middle school classroom on this day of my personal epiphany, looking at the students before me and seeing my own parenting clearly for the first time, I resolved to do what I needed to do to guide both my children and my students back toward the path to competence and independence. The way isn't smooth, and the going certainly isn't easy. But that's kind of the point. We parents are going to have to step back, leave those scary obstacles lying in the road, and allow our children to face them head on, given our support, love, and a lot of restraint. Our kids can learn how to engineer their own solutions and pave their way towards success that is truly over their own making. And I just want to read a bit from the end. I would go to the end and read you from there. I love a good parable. I'm an English teacher after all. Life is spent in pursuit of the stories that can help my students connect their individual journeys to the larger experience of being human. When we read the story of Pip's departure from home and return to redemption and Great Expectations, for example, Dickens reveals only one potential path through childhood, a route for rectifying our own missteps and a glimpse of a possible ending. Pip, like us, is imperfect, so it's reassuring to know that he finds his way through the mist and the danger and heartbreak of growing up. All this imperfection is rendered more tolerable when couched in fiction or fixed safely in the distant past. Our history textbooks are full of these stories, some accurate, some apocryphal. All of them meant to stir up or identify the culture based on a tradition of bootstrapping, invention from necessity, and the great comeback. The oft-seated story of Edison's education and 10,000 failed light bulbs, for example, has become one of the most famous stories of failure turned success in American history. So we understand that failure is not something we only have to give the aloneness to our kids. We have to give this aloneness also to the kid inside us. And this is something which is a life-learning journey. The curious idea to be perfect, guided and supported by the media is so there in the forefront. It's sometimes hard in this quick world to get away from that, get back and deeper into ourselves. So I would like to share at the end with a global risk report where I wanted to share a few results out of it, and just a few, because I don't want to end with risk, but with challenges and chances. So the Global Risk Report 2024 is interesting because it shows not only the risks in the world, which are really with scientific backward, but it shows also the risk we feel and where we think that these are there and are making us more frightened than others. Looking back at the events of 2023, plenty of developments and captured the attention of people around the world, while others received minimal scrutiny. Vulnerable populations grappled with little conflicts from Sudan to Gaza and Israel, alongside record-breaking heat conditions throughout, wildfires and flooding. Social discontent was palpable in many countries. News cycles dominated by polarization, violent protests, riots, and strikes. Although globally destabilizing, consequences such as those seen at the initial outbreak of the Russia-Ukraine war of the COVID-19 pandemic were largely avoided. Longer-term outlook for these developments could bring further global shocks. 2024 then even has highlighted a predominantly negative outlook for the world over the next 2 years that is expected to worsen over the next decade. Survived in September 2023, the majority of respondents, 54, anticipate some instability and a moderate risk of global catastrophes, while another 30% expect even more turbulent conditions. The outlook is markedly more negative over the 10 years time horizon, with nearly two-thirds of respondents expecting a stormy or turbulent outlook. These are long-term shifts in the arrangement of and relationship between four systemic elements of the global landscape. First, trajectories relating to global warming and related consequences to Earth systems, climate change. Second, changes in the size, growth, and structure of populations around the world, so demographic bifurcation. Then, developing pathways for frontier technologies, so technological acceleration, and material evolution in the concentration and sources of geopolitical power, geostrategic shifts. A new set of global conditions is taking shape across each of these domains, and these transitions will be characterized by uncertainty and volatility. As societies seek to adapt to those changing forces, their capacity to prepare for and respond to global risk will be affected. Environmental risk could hit the point of no return. Environmental risk continue to dominate the risk landscape over all three frames. Two-thirds of the respondents rank extreme weather as a top risk most likely to present a material crisis and on a global scale in 2024. With the warming phase of the El Niño Southern Oscillation cycle projected to intensify and persist until May this year. It is also seen as the second most severe risk over the two-year time frame and similar to last year's ranking, nearly all environmental risk featuring among the top 10 over the longer term. However, respondents disagree about the urgency of environmental risk, in particular biodiversity loss and ecosystem collapse and critical change to Earth systems. Younger respondents tend to rank this risk for more highly over the 2 years period compared to older age groups, with both risks featuring their top 10 rankings in the short term. The private sector highlights this risk as a top concerns over the longer term, in contrast to respondents from civil society or government who prioritize this risk over shorter time frames. It is interesting because as polarization grows and technology and technological risk remain unchecked, truth will come under pressure. And this is also something where people are a little bit concerned about that. And we see that, of course, misinformation and disinformation is something which comes more and more in the people's head. We talk about artificial intelligence, and artificial intelligence had made a lot of chances also for climate change to measure a lot and track. But on the other hand, we know that we can talk also, we have to face also fake news. So coming today to an end shows that we are in a life and a world full of challenges. We have faced this week a lot of them, especially in Germany, but also abroad. And the wars we have ongoing in the world are not really good if this continue. But we have to face that we have to start with us. It all starts with us. The peace starts with us, the intuition starts with us, and it's about us to change the world for the better. And you have to understand it's a small little steps about doing something in a different way. These can make the big, big change. Remember, this time is a gift for you to discover new inspiration, embrace exciting insights, and find the motivation to live to the fullest and give something back. Thank you for being part of our community. And thank you for engaging yourself here. Until next time, keep shining and empowering others. That's the best you can do. Together, we rise. Thank you.